RadioInfluence.com.
Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to the Wednesday edition of the Dark to Light podcast with
Hump Day Val and
Beans. It's Beans.
Yes.
We just finished an amazing interview with a gentleman who stood up to what he felt was an unethical practice of vaccinating people or inoculating people against COVID. His name is Joel Wood, and he is with America's Frontline Doctors now, trying to educate other people in his same position and let them know, like, you're not alone if you're feeling this is off or weird or whatever. And he was great to talk to, right?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah, it was good. Really, really good conversation. And it went all over the place. And the best thing is that it's one of those common sense conversations. So that's... It's all the questions that you think that you would need to have some kind of special training to think is off about the whole way that this is being promoted and pushed around and defended against. All those questions that we all have, those are the same questions that people that are in specialized positions like pharmacists are all asking the same thing. Because ultimately, Tracy, as we say, if it's a good idea, it doesn't need to be sold through fascism.
Amen.
And everybody's smelling the same rat right now. We don't all need to have gone to pharmacist school to know that something is weird with the way that we're being treated.
Amen. Yeah. So we'll get into this interview with him. It's a full hour long. And without further ado, here is the brave soul, Joel Wood, who stepped up with America's Frontline Doctors to tell people his concerns about this COVID vaccine. So we are so excited to be joined today by Joel Wood. And Joel has done something that we wish a lot more people would do, which is kind of stand up ethically against things that he feels are questionable. We'll just say it that way for now. Joel is a pharmacist in New York who stood up and made a call to his ethics line, the ethics line at Kinney Drugs, where he worked, talking about dispersing the vaccine to children. Joel, I'm going to let you talk about what happened. But before we begin, I just want to talk about what it takes to become a pharmacist. Can you kind of share some of your educational background, et cetera, with us?
Yeah, sure. Definitely. Thanks for having me this morning. Pharmacist, I'm technically a doctor. I have a doctor of pharmacy. It's a PharmD. That's specifically what my that's what I graduated with. It's a 6-year program. The last year used to be a bachelor's in science, and then they changed it to a doctorate program and made it 6 years compared to 5 years. And the next year is just kind of is just getting us more hands on, getting us more in the field. It's our rotations, similar to like what a physician would do, an MD or a DO. You know, they have a residency. So that's kind of similar for us. So it's a 6-year program. I take pharmacology classes, how drugs work, how pharmacokinetics, how drugs interact in your body, pharmacodynamics, how the drugs, how your body interacts with the drug itself. Therapeutics is a large part of what I do as a pharmacist. Therapeutics being like the questions you have, what side effects, what doses. It's kind of like the meat and potatoes of what pharmacists and pharmacy is. You know, we have these medications, the therapeutics, and we are aiming to treat, help, solve, cure disease or ailments, conditions that you have. So the therapeutics is a huge part of the role of what the pharmacist plays in any context, whether it's at the hospital, retail, which is where I was working. That's probably the too much more might be a lot of science mumbo jumbo, and we'll get into that.
So it's very involved. It's very involved.
Yes. Very involved.
Don't pharmacists often correct, like, you know, we had this conversation back during the hydroxychloroquine debate, but like, don't pharmacists somehow, like oftentimes, say to doctors, hey, listen, you shouldn't really prescribe this for this patient given X, Y, and Z. Does that happen often?
Yeah. So yes and no. I mean, I think, yes, in the context, I would say probably at least daily, I imagine a pharmacist has a concern with a medication that a doctor has prescribed. Now, the most common reason for that would be like a drug interaction.
Yep.
Sometimes like a complication interaction with a medication, like if you had a heart issue, there are certain medications that you wouldn't want someone to take because of their previous existing heart conditions. The majority of interactions that I would say commonly we would see would be like antibiotics. You know, like patient X has, you know, who knows, from a UTI to pneumonia, whatever ailment, whatever disease they have, they need an antibiotic for it. Antibiotics do a great job killing bugs, but they also can do a great job kind of wreaking havoc with your body, you know, on the specific level. So that is probably the most common time that I would say we would reach out to a physician and just say, hey, did you know patient is taking X drug? They might interact and they might, this might be the outcome. It might be something to do with their heart. Or a common one is it's called a QTC prolongation. You know, it's just the rhythm of your heart can get thrown out of whack with certain combinations of medications.
Like Zithromax and hydroxychloroquine, for example.
So yes, that would be in theory a concern. That would be a concern. Yes, or I can definitely see how that would be a concern. But if you look at, there's a lot of combinations of medications that are prescribed that would have a very similar concern with like the QTC prolongation, which is specific to the azithromycin and the hydroxychloroquine. But it's fairly common,
yep.
I would say it's common in practice to kind of, if the patient doesn't have pre-existing conditions with a heart, for example, you know, that would be something you would address with the doctor. And then the doctor would also give his opinion or his or her opinion. Yeah, that's valid, but I don't think it's a problem.
Yep.
And most of the time, I mean, I would say specifically for like the hydroxychloroquine and azithromycin, if the doctor doesn't have an issue with it, I'm less likely to have an issue with it, assuming that the patient doesn't have a pre-existing cardiac, you know, a regular Joe off the street with no issues. I would not have a problem with that.
So you ended up,
I mean, in kind of generalities.
Yeah. The only reason why I bring it up is because this was one of the things that the legacy media used to try and shut down the hydroxychloroquine debate when in actuality, it never ended up being that big of a deal. It was like you just explained. So let's get into what you've just done. I just wanted people to understand what a pharmacist or a doctor of pharmacy does and the breadth of knowledge and experience that you have in this realm. Because you'll see as we go through this, people will try and say, oh, it's just a pharmacist. He doesn't know what he's talking about. You know what I'm saying? Like, I want to make sure people understand that you are a doctor.
Yes. Yes. Well, if I could just speak to that quick, you know, one thing to, if you look at what has happened to the practice of pharmacy just over the last couple of years, I think you can kind of see, you know, my joke is we don't just count by fives. You know, that's kind of the ongoing thing. But I think you'll see, you know, in the beginning of this coronavirus pandemic, for example, HHS said that pharmacists can immunize the childhood schedule. You know, so people, you know, it may be at one point it may just have been, oh, pharmacists just count by fives. You know, maybe he's a doctor because the program changed. But what pharmacists can do and what we have the ability to contribute to the healthcare scene is the world, or at least the United States, is just, in my opinion, just starting to figure that out. And some of that is true as evidenced by, you know, we're doing testing now for COVID and for the flu and all these things. So the pharmacists can do quite a bit more than I think the current status would have people believe. We're just count by five and that's it. That's not even close.
Yep. Awesome. Fantastic. Okay. I want to know what happened now, and I think everybody does. Tell me, just in you know, briefly, we don't have to get into ridiculous detail, but good detail. What happened with you, and what did you just do that's caused you to lose your job? Because that's crazy.
Sure. Yeah. Well, so as a pharmacist, I have been on the front line since this coronavirus pandemic was unleashed. And I have been very concerned about it because the initial reports, you know, we are hearing is we're basically all going to die unless we lock ourselves in our house and XYZ. So being someone who would not be able to stay locked in their house as I had to go to work as a pharmacist, as an essential worker, I became very concerned with all things related to coronavirus. How do we treat it? How do we fix it? It's also part of my job. I mean, I'm in the public health sector. And at the time where I was working, I was floating around by the end of my career, but anyone, anywhere could be my patient. I mean, in a pharmacy, I mean, in a small rural pharmacy, you don't necessarily get that, but you know, and go to a pharmacy in New York City, you know, Syracuse, pick any major metropolis and you could see any person off the street come to you. It's also public health is kind of the concern I have. Like, I need to make sure that people are entering my pharmacy and I can give them the best healthcare access knowledge that I have. So long story short, became obsessed with all things coronavirus. Time goes on. I also was becoming concerned with, you know, as I'm sure your listeners know, and other people are hopefully starting to figure out the, I don't know, state tyranny, you know, in my opinion, the abuse of executive power that was unleashed after this, you know, this emergency, state of emergency scan. I mean, if anything, we've seen what it's like. You can have a state of emergency and then all of a sudden your governor can just take over and do whatever they want. As much as it has its benefits and definitely I don't think it's uncalled for, I also think, you know, I mean, at least speaking for New York, we're in this predicament now where he still has ultimate power. Andrew Cuomo still has ultimate authority and power. And, you know, when's he ever going to give it up? Is he ever going to get it? So that's also a concern I had. The mask mandates, now these vaccine passports, it's all been this cyclone of first of all, what is going on? And then second of all, concerns about it. So back to how it relates to my story. I was paying attention to all things related to coronavirus. Definitely concerned with the fact that I believe technically in months, the coronavirus vaccine was made. Although I've seen some documents, previous patents that may lead me to believe or question that. But in the very least, it was made through Operation Warp Speed fairly quickly, within a couple of months. And then the testing trials happened in that same time frame, couple of months. And now we are where we are now, where we're vaccinating the public. And I was always under the impression from day one that it was, you know, 2 weeks to slow the spread. And then the goalpost kept moving. Well, the most recent goalpost was we need to get people vaccinated. We need to get herd immunity. And all the talking heads were saying that, the FDA, CDC, the World Health Organization, legacy mainstream media, everyone was. Regardless of what the specific science and the data and statistics was saying or interpreting, I was like, okay, this is what we got to do. This is what everyone's saying. This is what we have to do. We got to give the shot. I was hesitant about it. It's a brand new shot. It's not FDA approved, contrary to what the current president and White House secretary are saying or have said, which is concerning on a whole other level. But that was my concern. Give the people a shot. I was hesitant. Didn't really want to because I didn't trust it. Not that I didn't trust it for any specific reason other than there's no long-term data. There's no safety. I mean, the safety trials were just, can people tolerate it? You know, which is not how normally trials would be done. There'd be like another phase that would analyze the real, probably like longer term safety side effect profile, not just if you get the shot, what happens next. That's kind of the phase that we kind of skipped over, one phase in terms of like the drug approval process, in my opinion. Mm-hmm. But people wanted to get it. People needed to get it. And people were at risk, you know, 65 and older, at least the coronavirus tends to have worse outcomes with them. Their survival rate goes down. So it made a lot of sense to give people the shot. And to some degree, who am I to tell you or not to tell you whether to get it, whether to get it, whether not to get it? I mean, I think to some degree that's my role in healthcare. But we're also in uncharted waters. This is an experimental drug, shot, vaccine. So, you know, no one's really kind of ever done this before. But I was giving people the shot. Beginning of January, my company had, Kidneys had had access to the vaccine through New York's, through Andrew Cuomo's plan to start to roll it out to places. And we got access to it. So I was giving it to people. And then when I kind of figured out, I don't know, maybe the end of February, maybe early March, when I figured out what was going on with its like FDA approval process, meaning the EAU, when I figured out what the EAU was, I felt it important to at least inform the people who are getting the shot that it wasn't an FDA approved product. And part of the reason for that is when people, like I had mentioned, the President Joe Biden and the White House press secretary and Dr. Fauci say it's FDA approved, in my opinion, that's misleading. It's not FDA approved. It has an emergency use authorization, the EAU. And according to the difference, you know, for anyone who is not familiar, is it hasn't gone through the same rigorous FDA approval process that other, at least vaccines and shots have, and I believe technically to some degree other drugs, I mean any drug or medication would have to go through kind of this approval process that this shot, any of the current manufacturers, Pfizer, BioNTech, Moderna, Johnson & Johnson and AstraZeneca, have not gone through that.
Can we stop for just 1 second? Sure. I want to focus on something here. I have a question for you.
Sure.
I love everything you're saying. I'm like, yes, this guy is so awesome. The thing that I want to say is, do you note the hypocrisy that they wouldn't allow or revoked the emergency use for hydroxychloroquine, ivermectin, et cetera, that have been on the market for like 80, 90 years because they said they weren't, quote, safe, because that's how people were prescribing them off label. Am I correct with that?
Correct.
But they'll allow the emergency use for this vaccine, which has gone through literally less than a year of clinical trial in adults. I want to make that very clear, in adults.
Yeah. Correct.
You know, I didn't mean to interrupt you. I just wanted to make the point of the hypocrisy for everybody.
Yeah, no, that's, I mean, I can speak to that quick too. It's my job to understand and interpret studies, drug studies, you know, I mean, it doesn't necessarily have to be drugs. I mean, it could be anything. I mean, it could be diet, exercise. I mean, one of the things that goes along with learning to be a pharmacist is how to interpret scientific statistical data and analyzing it in a means that is appropriate to interpret for everyone. You know, just a quick, you know, side note, like example, if someone produced a paper that said that drug X is the best drug ever, but then the paper was written by the company who made drug X, I would at least have some concern over if drug X really worked, and I'd really have to get into the statistical analysis to make sure that was true.
Yep.
Just as kind of so the hypocrisy, very true, very valid. What's more concerning for me is the reason that the hypocrisy even exists is they did those studies on ivermectin and hydroxychloroquine and azithromycin on patients, and this is going to sound very dark, and I don't mean it to be, but they did, you'll find out in the long run, they did those studies on people who were already not going to survive.
Yep.
I mean, the data and statistics for, you know, if you get put on a ventilator outside of the hospital getting paid bank for that scenario, much less if you pass away from COVID, and the hospital getting paid bank, that can be a story for a different time. You know, it wasn't good if you were put on a ventilator, and they found, you know, and there's so many reasons for that medically, like your whole body starts to shut down. It's your body's not even doing what your body should be doing. You have a ventilator doing it for you in terms of the breathing process. So, of course, you're going to start to cross into organ failure and your heart and your kidney. I mean, there's so many things going on. And yet this is the population that we decided to see if hydroxychloroquine, ivermectin, azithromycin worked. You know, I mean, it wouldn't take much to figure out that these drugs, which are potentially cardiotoxic, you know, are cardiotoxic in a population that's body is barely surviving and clinging on to life. I mean, that's what's more concerning to me outside of the hypocrisy is that we set a whole entire group of medications or treatments or anything. I mean, to be frank, anything that came out of, you know, the president's mouth at the time was immediately just shut down as insane poppycock, which is crazy in and of itself. But I mean, to speak to the hypocrisy, that's a huge red flag for me was,
yeah,
we just shut it down, but we also didn't even look at what could we have done with it? You know, what if we studied it in people who are younger, people when they had just tested positive? There's so many possibilities. I don't know why we didn't do it.
It wasn't,
I don't know why
science
we did
at that point, right? I mean, no. It wasn't.
No, I mean, not as far as science that I've seen or done. I mean, I don't know. You know, I've never experienced as a pharmacist a time in which the whole world is focused on one specific healthcare concern, in that the coronavirus.
Mm-hmm.
So it's hard to kind of, it is a little bit hard for me to say, you know, to be truthful. But I mean, if I had my own hospital or my own lab, I would be, you know, I'd be running experiments left and right. And it sounds kind of weird, like a mad scientist or nothing. But I mean, I'd be trying to figure out what is the best thing to do for all these people. I mean, for everyone, whether it's very sick and deathly and ventilator on COVID to I just turn, you know, I don't have any symptoms, but I tested positive. Should I take HCQ or it's not good. Yep. Anyways, it was not.
I interrupted you in the middle of you telling your story. So we were, I think we were like, where were we? We were back at the point where you were talking about, you know, you had been following COVID. Now you're at your pharmacy. You were giving the shot, even though you had questions about it. And
yes.
I guess we'll pick up from there. We were February, March, I believe, in timeline.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. So the FDA, I had more concerns over the shot when I kind of really unearthed what the FDA approval process kind of, you know, that this shot was not approved by the FDA. Like specifically, it was not approved by the FDA. It just had the EAU. So I started to tell patients that, and I got a lot of very unique responses and answers, as you can imagine. And I'll just kind of go over, you know, what I would say, like the three most common ones were, one was, you know, that's okay. I'm ready to be microchipped by Bill Gates, which is kind of funny, but also at the same time, like concerning because, well, it's just Bill Gates. And to say that you're ready to be microchipped by anybody is, I mean, kind of funny, but also maybe kind of concerning because technology is very scary. Technology is scary. It could be scarier in the very near future. Another response that was concerning is people would say, well, the first one was because the vaccine that we were giving was one of the two dose ones. So, and I was floating around to different places. So if someone had said, well, the first one was, that means to me that we did not tell them that this was not FDA approved the first time because they thought it was FDA approved. Now, when you say FDA approved, it just means that there's an emergency use authorization. But I still think that that's important and as part of informed consent, which is also a big reason. And I'll get into that, the informed consent concern in a little bit. So that's another concerning response is, well, the first one was, you know, I mean, in my opinion, we didn't do due diligence and give them informed consent to say this is not FDA approved. And the third response that was far less common, but I think important to note is, well, then why is everyone telling us to get it? And I think that that's an important response because when someone asked me that, I told them what my opinion was, you know, and I don't know. I don't know why you can get free Krispy Kreme donuts or free beer or why we're paying social media influencers to say they got their shot. I'm not sure. I mean, I imagine, you know, you could say it's because, well, we want to get everyone vaccinated, and that would be true. But, you know, we haven't done that for the influenza. I mean, there's so many shots. Like, why is this shot, this experimental shot, the one that we decide the whole entire world needs to now get? And like, we're going to give away lotto tickets in New York State to make sure you get it. I mean, it's just so bizarre.
Larry Flint in Vegas is giving away free strip teases, limo rides, and all kinds of free bottle at the strip club for vaccine people who get the vaccine at his location. That's where
awesome. We're at. Awesome. Yep. I mean, yeah. I mean, I saw a doctor in California giving away a Tesla. You know, so I mean, and so I don't know. You know, that's my whole that's where I'm at in this conundrum. I don't know. I only know what I only know what I know and what I've been trained to know and educated with and what I can see going on. And I just don't know why these it's concerning to me. I mean, it's concerning to me. Like, why are people paying or looking to pay? It's just so weird. It's so bizarre. So going back to my ethical concern, I started to have concerns with like the FDA approval process and like people not knowing informed consent. We need to be telling people what the informed consent means. And in theory, you cannot give informed consent, in my opinion, as of right now for this shot for multiple reasons. Two obvious ones, I would say. One, the package insert is blank. For every medication that comes in a box or a pill, there should be like a folded up pieces of paper. And in that comes with most everything you need to know about the medication, side effects, some of the trials, you know, inner inactive ingredients. I mean, it's pretty inclusive of what you need to be able to discuss that medication with anybody from a patient to a physician who's able to understand, you know, the drug physiology or drug / human physiology. And it's blank. It, not only is it blank, it's intentionally left blank. That's
is that
what it says.
In all of the vaccines that it's intentional?
Yes.
Are you
sure? This is the one thing I wanted to ask about because I saw Tracy, do you see any of those videos?
Yeah. I thought it might have been a printing fluke.
Now I saw a couple of them. Pharmacists just unpacking the packing slip, and it is it almost looks like that illusion that some people walk around with a $100 bill wrapped around a wad of ones, and you think that there's something inside of it, but it's really all just a joke. Is that Is that a fluke, or is that really across the board? They're not providing any information on this stuff.
So they're not. It's such a crazy story. They're not providing any information. So the informed consent, I will get back to that, Frank. The informed consent, that's intentionally left blank for whatever. Well, I know the reason. I think I know the reason, and I'll explain in 1 minute. The other part about informed consent is there's no long-term trials. There's no long-term data. So I cannot inform you of what could happen in the long term because we don't know. I can only inform you as to what I have seen in like, you know, we've been giving it for 5 months now, right? I can only inform you what I've seen happen in 5 months in this country and then in other countries across the world. So as far as my informed consent as a provider goes, I can't tell you anything about what's in it. I mean, I do know some of what's in it, but like the package insert, I can't tell you anything from what's in it. And there's no long-term outcomes. You had said, is this... So my understanding is we will get that information. We will get the information published in that package insert once it's FDA approved. That is what my understanding is. I believe a woman in Texas spoke to the Senate hearing, the Committee of State Affairs. A pediatrician spoke to this as it pertains to the children aspect. And I'll continue with my story when it comes to the kids soon. So that's what's scary about it. They will publish that information once it's FDA approved.
You've got to read the bill to see what's in it. Yeah. Or you got to pass the bill to see what's in it. I'm sorry.
Yeah. Oh, boy. So So that's exactly that. That's what like one of the multiple concerns that I also have is like, you know, this data is going to be published while it's actively going on. And then, you know, I mean, who knows? What if it turns out that, you know, I'll give the example that's crazy, but this is, I think people get the picture. If all of a sudden you start growing a third arm, like no one's going to, that won't be officially published until it's FDA approved. And like, that's when it'll come out. But in the meantime, like people will be growing third arms like that. That's very concerning. I mean, if people are growing third arms, that's very concerning, obviously. But I think you kind of can get my drift is we don't know what could happen, but we won't officially know until it's approved. But it already could be too late because we've been giving it in this experiment. So I mean, that's at least the my concern about the package insert and informed consent and being, you know, we're going to get this information post experiment. I mean, and we are the experiment. So that's terrifying, to say the least. Going back to my concern, I started to see reports coming out. So FDA approved informed consent. These are all kind of issues fresh on my mind. The kids is what really kind of pushed me over the limit. Pfizer was approved for the Pfizer and BioNTech was approved for kids 12 and up. And that was when I was like, I don't even understand how what is the emergency that kids 12 and up are having as it pertains to coronavirus? You know, the EAU is an emergency use. I mean, my question is, what is the emergency in 12 to 15 or even 12 to 18? I mean, I would say even higher, you know, 12 to 30 or 40. But regardless, I can get that to that in a minute. What is the emergency in this age group? I'm not sure. I don't know. How did it get approved? I don't know necessarily. But it's a problem. I mean, for me, it's a problem. I don't know why children need this. They tolerate the disease quite well. If they even know that they have it, the death rate, the survival rate is 99.999x for children. So
and that's what I don't get there, Joel. Yesterday, what was it? We got that those articles. I brought it up on my nighttime show. That Moderna now makes the claim that their shot for teenagers and the younger demographics is 100% effective, and I thought, well, that's convenient since 100% of them are surviving either way, and so it's almost like built-in success.
Yeah,
but 100% of them aren't tolerating the shot correctly. Like I mean, doing a study right now about heart inflammation in kids from the shot.
Exactly. I mean, it may yield results that they're going to explain away in the other direction. But this is the equivalent of saying, hey, we put out a vaccine here to prevent deaths from paper cuts. And we already know that I don't know how many people are dying from paper cuts every year, but you'd make a lot of money. And so it's crazy to see that happen.
Yeah. My wife actually just sent me an article last night about, I have to, maybe I can find it quick, about long-term mild COVID-19 induces lasting antibody protection, Washington University School of Medicine, St. Louis. So, I mean, not that I want anyone to get COVID or get sick, but I mean, at least in mild cases, you have lasting antibody protection. I mean, to me, I would say from what I've seen and what I know of, you know, communicable diseases, for a disease, you get lasting antibody protection, which is one thing we want. It's also what part of the vaccine is for, and that's what the shot is for, to give the antibodies. But I would rather someone get it naturally, get coronavirus naturally, have a non-existent case or a mild case, and then they're protected for the rest of their lives, versus potentially inducing a response from the vaccine and not knowing what the outcomes could be. I mean, that's my whole argument. I don't know what the outcomes could be. What are the outcomes of getting the shot? Risk benefit. What are the outcomes of getting the shot? No one knows. Versus what are the outcomes of getting coronavirus? The only population that seems to have negative health outcomes is 65 and older, maybe 50 and older.
And comorbidity.
And definitely, and at any age, if you have comorbidities, you're definitely at a higher risk for sure.
3.7 of them, to be precise.
Yeah, right. So that's my whole case and my whole concern. Getting back, too many rabbit holes, right?
Yep.
So getting back to my ethical concern, the FDA approval process was concerning, informed consent. More of a concern. And then the children was like, this is something, you know, I'm not giving this shot to kids. And after I started seeing some of the awful reports about women's cycles being altered in whatever context, that also drew concerns with me. Mentioned on page 67 of Pfizer's trial is something called vaccine shedding. It's a phenomenon that we have known about for a while, for a long time. I mean, I even saw some papers that's how they plan to give vaccines in the future, is just like almost aerosolized, or like, you know, you only need to inject a few people because the vaccine, you will shed the vaccine or the shot, whatever, from your body. So anyways, it's in Pfizer's study that they were specifically concerned with environmental contact with pregnant women through both inhalation and skin to skin. So like a man, husband, boyfriend whose woman is pregnant gets the shot, they go home and cuddle in bed together, there's skin to skin contact, or inhalation, you're just breathing. You could be shedding the spike protein, which is what the vaccine creates, or the shot creates, that spike protein that is, you know, added or not added or grew, you know, developed naturally in the world, depending on which, you know, which theory or conspiracy theory you decide to pick from the Wuhan lab. But that's, you know, story for a different time. So between women of childbearing age and children, I'm very concerned with the administration of this shot. I don't know what could happen to kids. I don't know what could happen to women of childbearing ages, but just seeing that women's cycles were being, that they weren't normal. They weren't right. That just throws a huge concern for me, because this is one, the age group that like is kind of up now is like we are available to get the shot. I mean, we've been available, but that age group, childbearing age, women of childbearing age, and then kids younger, they're freshly approved. And I've seen Dr. Fauci talk with Tyra Banks that they plan on dropping this process down to like 6 months, it's 6 months and up. Insane. You know, they're in my opinion, there are people who would like to see every single person on this planet get this shot. And I will say, to be fair, I'm not necessarily saying every single person shouldn't get the shot. What I'm saying is, I don't know that the shot is right for everybody compared to everybody just maybe getting the coronavirus. That's the ultimate ethical concern of my case. That's why
we have an Ebola outbreak and they came up with a cure or vac or shot for Ebola that will prevent you from getting it. And Ebola is like rampant throughout the entire world right now. And people are bleeding out their eyes all over the place in every single community. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah. I mean, I would definitely be more concerned if that was the case. But what I mean, if you look at, you know, the symptoms of coronavirus, I mean, if you wake up and have a sneeze, you could have coronavirus. I mean, it's similar to the common cold. Coronaviruses have been around for years. 5 to 7% of the annual upper respiratory infections could be from coronavirus, or are from coronaviruses. I mean, it's not, the coronavirus itself is nothing new. Now the SARS coronavirus, you know, that's a whole new ball game. But and that's what this coronavirus is a SARS-CoV-2 coronavirus too. But you know, you're 100% right. If Ebola was, you know, rampant around, I mean, I would definitely be more, you know, but at the same time, if it turns out that, you know, certain age groups or certain populations, men, women, young, old, you know, if for some reason Ebola was ripping through communities, but they weren't affected by Ebola, I would be concerned with giving them a shot or a vaccine that would prevent them from getting it, because I don't necessarily know that them getting the Ebola
would be,
you know, if they're not having an issue with getting Ebola, I don't know that I would be worried about, you know, the shot, because I don't, unless I had long-term data and statistics to tell me it's okay if they get the shot, nothing really happens, or there's no bad outcomes.
Do you think that the majority of people that you have treated or inoculated, including, you know, some of your colleagues inoculating kids, if you were to have said to them, I just want to, you know, we need to inform you this, you know, shot is under an emergency use authorization. It is not yet FDA approved because it hasn't gone through the process to become FDA approved yet. Do you think that more people would have gotten up and walked out and said, no, thank you?
Yes. Yeah. Well, I don't know.
It's like Obamacare. It's like the Jonathan Gruber situation again there too. When he admits to on his college tour talking about the tortured way that Obamacare legislation was written, that if anybody knew what was really going on in there, Democrats and Republicans alike would have said, no, thanks. Maybe we should take another route to achieving this grand dream of health care reform in the country. I mean, everybody gets taken for a ride for sure. Why wouldn't they? It's the same exact thing with this.
So right. We have only about 15 minutes left, so I want to make sure we get to the crux of things. So sure. You went and you placed a call. Just let's get to the actions you took, which led to you being terminated.
Yes. So everything that I just spoke of this whole time has culminated to this phone call. I took everything, I mean, and more into consideration, and I have an ethics line. I called my ethics line and I said, I'm concerned with vaccine shedding. It's mentioned in Pfizer's study. You can't just dismiss it like it's some conspiracy theory. Google, sure. I mean, they wrote it in their trial. That means they are to some degree concerned, if not aware, that it exists or could exist. Otherwise, why would they write about it? So I went to I called the ethics line at work and said, can you please address how you're going to keep people, you know, your employees safe who have not decided to be vaccinated yet? Because we're around other colleagues and we are actively vaccinating people. And then I also addressed concerns with children, giving the vaccine to children, and also to some degree with women, you know, like I said, the childbearing age. You know, I've seen some things and it's scary. Can you please address these things? If not, I'm going to forward my concerns to OSHA, which is the federal level Occupational Safety Hazard Association, something like that. I'm sorry, I don't remember the abbreviation. There's too many of those, you know, 3 and 4 letter abbreviations to keep track. OSHA was who I needed to contact about workplace safety. I also emailed, because I wasn't sure if my employer would get the voicemail, or I didn't want them to be able to say they didn't get it. So I also emailed them my what I had said in the voicemail, and also the Pfizer study and other documenting evidence to kind of address my concerns. And I heard no response. The company didn't address it. So I went to OSHA. OSHA with a similar complaint. OSHA got back to me and said that they don't have any. As of right now, there's no procedures or policies, and they don't have any jurisdiction over the coronavirus handling pandemic, you know, anything related to coronavirus, which was a concern for me. They recommended that I contact New York State Governor's Office, New York State Department of Labor, and New York State's COVID-19 hotline. And so I wrote back to OSHA and said, well, this is a massive problem. You mean to tell me that the federal government, who is supposed to have the people's interest at heart, the part of the federal government in OSHA, doesn't have any safety procedures in place for when Big Pharma releases an experimental shot into the world, and the people that I can reach out to about this are the same people that I'm potentially looking to accuse, or I'm concerned with violating human rights as set forth in the Nuremberg trials. And I just said, can you forward that to your supervisor so that you can have it on the record? And there was no response back from OSHA, and I wouldn't expect a response back after the email. I mean, there's nothing that they can do. So that's kind of like what I did in the background. I've also been reaching out to news media sites for months with what I've seen has been going on. So I told my boss I was not going to give the shots anymore. I'm not comfortable. I'm not confident I'm not comfortable administering the shots based off of an ethical concern that I don't know if all of these people we're just giving it to should be getting it. And where that kind of comes in from the ethical concern for me relates back to Nuremberg. So the Nuremberg trials in Geneva post-World War II set up what the differences are in human rights as it pertains to experiments. And I'm by no means an expert in this. I've only read kind of what I needed to read to kind of, in my opinion, establish my case. We need to have a quality experiment. You need free will informed consent, meaning you cannot have any outside, you cannot have anything on the outside manipulating or experience or changing or altering what is going on. So my concern is between both is the pandemic a real pandemic? That's a concern I have. And to whatever degree it is or isn't, the data, in my opinion, has been statistically manipulated or shifted, or the World Health Organization and the Centers for Disease Control have approached this in so many different ways and changed what a COVID death is and what a COVID death isn't. And on Joe Biden's inauguration, they changed how they're running the PCR tests, which comes 4 months after the New York Times writes a paper that the cycles are way too high on these tests. And it's, upwards of a 98% positivity, false positives. There's so many questions. My ethical concern is, if this is not a pandemic, which I'm hesitant to believe that it is, no more people have died in 2020 than in previous years, potentially even less people died. If it's not a pandemic, then we are giving this shot under the false pretense to people that it's that they need this shot, but they don't need it. It's not a pandemic. So they don't have informed consent. The package insert is blank. There's no long-term trials. So fraud and deceit. If there is fraud and deceit at hand, which I go back to, if this is a true pandemic, in my opinion, if it's not a true pandemic, then we are fraudulently telling the people that this experimental shot, and it is experimental, it's not FDA approved, is what they need. And that might not be the case. Coercion is also another concern I have as it relates to the trials at Nuremberg and what's currently going on. I believe people are being coerced or could be coerced into getting the shot because, according to Joe Biden from, I don't know, 2 weeks ago now, it's the only way you can take your mask off. I mean, at least that's, and the CDC backed that up. The CDC says fully vaccinated people can take their mask off. I mean, to me, that's coercion. You are actively telling people, hey, you want to take your mask off and get back to what normal was? You got to get the shot. I mean, to me, that is a false. You're not giving people do not have the ability to make a full understanding determination of whether or not this shot is or is not safe or would be appropriate for them.
I think that when you see what's happening now, it's also because there's a narrative that's being set from sources that are pretending to be authoritative and have been backed up by the entire media apparatus on out there and all those who have been employed by the federal government in a medical sense for a long time. And because they know their limitations, like everything else, whether it be surveillance or defense contracting, whatever the hell it is, gain of function research, they go and they outsource it to places that have very little oversight. And another thing that's going on right now is that they're outsourcing this kind of medical segregation in society to the private sector, which I think brings on up what we may be heading toward right now in the way that you brought up OSHA before. Well, how open are we now to numerous types of discrimination lawsuits against private enterprise who are going on out there and trying to carry water for a federal government that is putting out a narrative there that we can take the masks off, but you have to have had the shots or something like that. Well, how the hell are you going to find that out if you're not telling people to give up medical information about themselves at the door? How do you even do that? They're leaving that up to private industry to figure that out, how we can start segregating society again. But that's not only going to run into a lot of really uncomfortable situations with forcing people perhaps to go and take drugs they don't want, but there's so many civil rights and discrimination laws on the books right now that have already taken away the private sector's ability to actually run their businesses. I'm just wondering to see what kind of legal turmoil so much of the country is going to be roiled in now, because anybody who owns a business knows it's impossible to hire, fire, discipline people. And now all of a sudden you're going to you need to do medical checks at the door with your customers or your employees. I think this is going to be a disaster, if you ask me.
Oh, definitely. Yeah. I mean, I couldn't agree more. And even, you know, I don't, you know, in the broadest most term, it's going to be a disaster just from the sheer standpoint of we're going to be going back in history to a time which discrimination and segregation is common practice. I mean, what is going on? It's so bizarre. It's so bizarre. It's such a scary, bizarre thing that so that's I mean, like you said, Frank, definitely that's another concern I have as well. I mean, in New York, you have, the last I knew, you have to get the COVID shot to be able to attend a SUNY school. Legally my understanding is they cannot mandate the shot because it's not FDA approved.
Which is my next thing before we get to them. They basically fired you because you refused to do your job, correct?
Yes. Yes. So I, as a pharmacist, I have, as a pharmacist and a professional, you know, healthcare professional, I have the ability under moral, religious, or ethical concerns to not provide a service. So, quick example, the easiest example would be if I had a concern with giving a woman like the morning after pill because of a religious, I was against it for a religious backing. I have the right to refuse that as long as I show her or tell her where else she can go, or the pharmacist tomorrow will do that. So just as an example, that would be like one reason that I could say, like, I'm not comfortable with this kind of practice or with this therapy or whatnot. So that's the stance that I took. I have an ethical concern administering this shot to children. And honestly, at this stage, I have an ethical concern administering the shot in anyone who's 50 or younger, because I don't know the risk benefit of getting the shot versus getting COVID in this population. I don't know that people under 50 are at such a risk that the shot is more benefit than what would happen from getting natural immunity from getting COVID.
Yeah.
So that is what I was fired for. Yes. They there is no room. They, in theory, they should be able to accommodate me. According to the New York State Board of Pharmacy, they should be able to accommodate me and just set me up with a position in a job with a job with a position that I do not have to administer the shot.
I mean, yeah. Why can't they just have you working, you know, with medications or like, is it?
Right. Well, so the reason is because according to that I was given, pharmacist's new role in the healthcare scene is to be giving vaccinations.
Yeah. Wow.
And that's the answer that I was given. And I said, I don't have a problem giving vaccines. I don't have a problem giving vaccinations. I just have a problem giving this COVID shot. So, I mean, I don't have a problem with flu or pneumonia. You know, I mean, the vaccine issue can be a story for a very different time. But specifically, COVID shot is the vaccine, if it even is a real vaccine. That is where I put my foot down, and that is why I was let go.
So you ended up finding America's frontline doctors.
Yes.
And are they helping you right now?
Yes. Yes. They are. I'm working with America's frontline doctors to try to kind of bring more education and awareness to the issues and concerns that people have. I'm working with America's Frontline Doctors to try and find other healthcare. I'm working with America's Frontline Doctors to let other people in the medical community and also in your state, in the country, and potentially in the world to know that you are not alone. There are other people who think and feel similarly to the way that I do, and I think we do. In the very least, that something's not right and that we got to do something to kind of get back to some kind of normalcy. Or like Frank said, we're going to be living in this 1984 discrimination dystopia. Yeah. I mean, it's going to be awful.
I have a question for you real quick.
Sure.
This is something that I'm really interested in your opinion on. So, and it's bothering me and I'm concerned about it. Let's just say, because Politico had an article that came out yesterday that basically said that they're going to try to fast track FDA approval on this, on these things now. Right. And I mean, I don't know what liability the FDA would have if they approved this, and it shouldn't have been, because there's really no accountability anymore anywhere. But once they do that FDA approval, you know, does that change your feelings on it anymore, knowing what you know now, number one? And number two, then they can mandate this damn thing. And we still, you know, I know it takes a couple years usually. Are they going to speed this up? Do you know? I mean...
So I believe that they might have FDA approval by the summer. Part of my understanding is, I think because they've done it in so many people, I mean, it's like half the country, you know, like 200 million doses we've already given. So I think that's I believe that that's what they could be going for, is to getting it that soon. So there's multiple concerns. Pardon me. Multiple concerns as it pertains to like the rapid FDA approval process. So who protects you? Well, in the Reagan administration, like 1984-ish, I believe.
Hold on. You said something, because there's so many people now that have gotten it. The problem with that, in my opinion, share yours, is that we are being the people that are having issues with this therapy. Gene therapy, for lack of a better word, right, are not being taken seriously, or are being told that the issues they're encountering, in many cases death after they get it, is a consequence of the natural order of things rather than a consequence of what they've just injected into their body. There is no clinically followed procedure with this quote trial, other than the VAERS system's overloaded, but they try to discredit the VAERS system every other day because it's not real. And do you see that, what I'm saying?
Yeah. Oh yeah, definitely. Yeah. That's 100% spot on. I don't know. I mean, I don't know how you can look at certain cases and situations and say, you know, person X got the shot, dropped dead 2 days later. Well, that was spontaneous. Yeah. Oh, okay. I guess maybe. I mean, maybe for one person, okay, sure. But I mean, my opinion is, like, as it starts to happen, like, at what point do you say, well, what was different in the last week from what this person did? Oh, he received. And that's not, it's not necessarily just true for the shot. It's true for anything, right? I mean, that's what's scary about it, is like, if you were going along and then the next day you developed a rash, or you know, your arm fell off, or you passed away. If you people would look and say, well, did anything happen differently in the day or the week or maybe even the month before? Did you start a new therapy? Did you change your diet? I mean, as far as I knew before 2020 and COVID happened, that's how we would look to analyze this information. We would say, oh, well, you took this medication, you received this injection. I wonder if that had something to do with it.
Well, it's like if you break out your rash after an antibiotic, they're not going to say, it's not the antibiotic, you must have touched something wrong. They're going to say, you got a rash, you're allergic to penicillin, don't take it again, or else it'll be, you see what I'm saying? Like, and then.
I don't know why we're not doing it.
On top of that, you have the CDC changing case reporting and breakthrough cases, changing the way deaths are reported. They're throwing the ball in a different direction midway down the field, and nothing can be trusted at this point. And as soon as this damn thing gets FDA approval, in my opinion, it is going to unleash an even greater world of problems than we have right now today.
Yes. I don't understand what FDA approval is even going to do. I mean, look at what they've been able to sell without the approval. This is all being done on emergency use authorization alone. I seriously don't know what approvals from this bureaucracy even means. I mean, they're already legally immune to everything. I seriously don't know if the numbers that they've been telling us about the inoculated are true, where we're well over 100 million people, which I actually really don't even believe. If the numbers are true, then it really doesn't even matter what the hell they put a rubber stamp on.
They can. What does it give them?
So one thing that I would say it gives them, well, it's kind of a twofolded. I believe even under the EAU now, as it exists and definitely will exist once it's FDA approved, is any vaccine shot that they make in the future for COVID will be covered. Similar to like the flu vaccine, right? The flu vaccine every year, we use genetic drifting to try and see which flu is going to be, which flu are we going to get? And then we try to kind of counteract that by giving people a shot, the flu shot, so they don't get it. So the same thing would happen with this, with COVID, with a COVID shot. In the future, they will not even have to take the shot to like a study or a trial. They only have to take it to a trial because it was already approved on the first go round. They can kind of use that same formulation. So that would be one thing.
They'll use the tech from it too. Solidify.
Say that again.
Then they can use the tech from it too.
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, that's how it would work. Like they under the assumption of, well, the first one was safe and effective. God. We can just make a certain tweak, to tweak it for, COVID 2021, for example. And like, well, then we'll be protected. So that would be one issue. The other, to address your concern, Frank, with what's the FDA give them? I think it gives them exactly what they want. People who I don't want to necessarily insult people, but people who aren't necessarily thinking outside of the box, or people who have just blind faith trust in some of these government bodies, if it's FDA approved, then you can, then when I say this is not FDA, I don't say that anymore. I just say, oh, it's FDA approved, and then people can
like
have
Vioxx, like Vioxx was
like Vioxx, like thalidomide. Yeah. I mean, there's a whole list of them. Yeah, exactly. I mean, that's 100, good call on the Vioxx. Exactly. So, I do also want to reiterate quick. I am not saying that the CDC or the World Health Organization or the FDA is specifically practicing, doing things on purpose, doing malicious things or with malicious intent. I'm not saying that. What I am saying is it's very difficult as a practitioner to keep track of the constant ever-changing manner in which we are tracking this disease and these shots. I mean, like you said, Tracy, that they've been manipulating. I mean, I said it to you earlier, manipulating what's a death, what's a case. Now if you have received the shot, you won't count as a COVID case unless you're hospitalized. So, I mean, there's just so many things that, in my opinion, don't make any sense as someone who's trying to track and keep a watch on what this disease and how this disease and how the recovery, that's what the vaccine is for, how the recovery is going. I it's so hard to keep track of it. And that's where my concern comes from. That's where I believe the Nuremberg trials is what we are kind of facing again. Like there's so much information out there that's unknown. I don't know how we can be giving this experimental shot and not be violating these human rights that were set forth in Geneva at Nuremberg during the Nuremberg trials, because I don't know what the answer is. Wow. I mean, if we went back to monitoring this disease, or, if we changed how we monitor this coronavirus like we did before coronavirus, like similar to the flu, would we have the same numbers if we didn't change the PCR tests on Joe Biden's inauguration? Would we have the same numbers if we were using the numbers that we changed the PCR test to on Joe Biden's inauguration? If we were using that all year long in all of 2020, would that have changed and manipulated the outcome and the total fear and panic? I don't know. I don't know. I'm just a New Yorker who's trying to take care of my family and the public I was trying to take care of the public as it pertains to my duty. And now that's what I'm trying to do now, because I don't know, but a lot of people want answers and I want answers too, because I don't want bad things to happen to people. And I especially don't want bad things to happen to people if they don't even know what's going on. Yeah. And I've been very involved in what's going on and I don't even know what's going on. So I took an ethical stance to try to get some answers, and I'm not going to stop until I get some of those answers.
Well, God bless you for that. That's awesome. Is there anywhere that people can get in touch with you if they want to, or, I'm going to put obviously the link to this article in the show notes below, but I'm sure our audience is going to want to thank you or see something or whatever.
Yeah. So I'm currently working. I'm going to work on getting a page set up for myself. In the meantime, I can send you my email so you can, if you'd put it underneath the link, but my email is patriotalchemist45@protonmail.com.
Huge claps and a standing ovation for that one.
Cool. Thanks. I appreciate it. Alchemy is very, very cool. It's a very, very deep, long story, and oh, there's so much cool, fun stuff to talk about. But that's why it was Alchemist, because there's not a lot. I don't know how many true alchemists there are left in the world. You know, I mean,
yeah,
I know.
So I don't even necessarily know that I am a true alchemist, but I'm trying to.
Oh,
get there.
Oh, trust me. If you're a true alchemist, you'll know one day for sure. Right. Because I'll tell you one thing. It's people try to make something out of nothing with things like, I don't know, there's still a lot of crypto that I don't understand. But what I do know is that if you can turn lead into gold, my friend, you don't have to buy no Bitcoin. Really? So that's one thing I'll say. So what I wish you luck in your alchemy journey.
Yeah, thanks. I appreciate it.
Awesome. Well, listen, Joel, thanks for being brave and standing up and working with these good folks and trying to empower other people in your same position to do the right thing. Because at the end of the day, it is just us. And we have to fight for ourselves against this craziness.
Yep. I 100% agree. But I have faith. We the people, I think, are going to make one hell of a comeback.
Amen. Awesome. Thanks so much for being here.
No problem. Thanks for having me.
This is an MMA report with Jason Floyd and Daniel Galvan quick fix on Radio Influence.
Great win by Rob Font in the main event. Just an unbelievable performance. And now puts himself, probably one win away potentially from a title matchup. Of course, we'll see how this division all unfolds with, whenever Sterling comes back from, his surgery, it should be him versus Peter Yan. But I just, for some reason, I feel like that fight's just not going to happen. And, of course, we got the Sanhagen and Dillashaw fight come up here. I want to say that's on July the 24th. I've seen some people maybe potentially mention the name of Dominic Cruz for Rob Font. Maybe something that he's going to go for there. But a tremendous win just jabbing, Cody Garbrandt. And one of the things, and Cody did this Instagram Live, and the comment that really stuck out to me was this. He goes, Rob was a better man today. I just felt like I was fighting myself in there, battling myself, and I'm not taking anything away from him. Congrats on his camp, first and foremost. Thank God for keeping us both safe in there. A lot of positives come for this. Brush off and get back with my coaches and teammates. We're still striving to be the best and be world champions. Sometimes there's adversity that comes along in your dreams and makes you work harder, makes you realize what needs to be done, and makes it much sweeter climbing up the mountain. After what I saw on Saturday night, I really have a lot of questions on whether or not the former UFC bantamweight champion can get back there.
Man, I would be shocked. I would be shocked if we're watching a UFC bantamweight championship fight and Cody Garbrandt's in the cage. Because it's just, simply put, Cody Garbrandt's won one time in the past 5 years.
The MMA Report with Jason Floyd and Daniel Galvan can be found on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, Google Podcasts, and RadioInfluence.com.